Gazebo.
The Shilling Show continues here on what was once known as Pearl Harbor Day, today left out of the newspaper altogether. I don't know quite what to make of that, but we don't forget here. In fact, I'm so excited for this interview because I've been wanting to do this for a long time. People listening to the program regularly know that we do a 9/11 commemorative show every single year. And I mentioned on the air that I wanted to do a Pearl Harbor show, but didn't know anyone to talk with. And a wonderful member of our listening audience, Charles, gave us the contact information for Patricia Reuterschild, who is here with us online today on the Newsmaker line, happens to be a local resident. Patricia, welcome to the Shilling Show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. I want you to tell us the circumstances of your presence in Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
Well, I was there because my father was in command of the Naval Air Station on Ford Island in the middle of Pearl Harbor. He was in command of the Patrol Wing 2 of the Air in the Pacific at the same time. And he was class of 07. And many, many firsts in his favor. He had an incredible career. He was Naval Aviator Number 7. He was a great pioneer of Air Force. He was the first American pilot to encounter enemy in Veracruz, rather. And he was commander of the first transatlantic flight to the Azores in 1919, mm-hmm. way before Lindbergh even attempted it. So he had a lot of firsts to his name and was constantly pushing for air power, our naval air power.
You know, I have been to the Arizona Memorial, so I have some sense of, you know, of the general area. But what was life like day to day? You living as a young person in Pearl Harbor, it kind of sounds like it probably would have been fun and carefree. Was it like that for you?
Totally. It was idyllic. It was a carefree time. Our house was right on the point to the left of Arizona. Mm-hmm. And our house had been an old embattlement fort that was built way back in 1912 or 13, something like that. And it was built over this fort with two great big turret openings where the turret guns were gone, of course. And this, from that edge of the water, is where we lived. And the boats were all around us. The ships were all around us. So when it all started, of course, we were pushed down in as minutes. You know, when the shrapnel started flying into our house, we were pushed downstairs into the basement as fast as possible. And from there, we older girls, I was 14 at the time, and went to the opening, the large opening where the turret gun had been, and started pulling the men through who were shot and blown from the ships and had swum through the burning oil. Mm. And these men were totally, totally black, covered. So their skin was just shaky, hanging off of them in ribbons. And they were in terrible torture. You know, their eyes were the only thing that you could see. Some of their lips were closed tight. It was just an appalling thing to watch. Then we pulled them through and covered them up as fast as we could. They were taken over to the dispensary on the other side of the island, which is tiny, this island. It's only a mile by a mile and a half. This is where the airfield was. Mm-hmm. While we were watching and pulling all this through, the Japanese pilots were strafing the men as they crawled up our grassy slope to the openings. I mean, it was just ruthless. And you could see their faces. They were so low. They skimmed down there, though. And it was a horrifying sight. Several of us were grinning at us. It was just something that children shouldn't see. It was horrific.
I want to ask you about that. You were 14 years old. Innocent, perhaps, even compared to 14-year-olds today, you know, of that time. How on earth, you were not a nurse or trained to do any of this, how on earth did you find it within you, Patricia, to actually assist people that were in so badly damaged physically? I can't imagine that.
Well, we were told to do it, and you realized it was necessary. There weren't many of us, and so we covered them up and gave them a cigarette if they needed it, and just as fast as they came in, they were taken out as fast as possible, but some of them were too far gone. One died in my arms, and I'd never seen a dead person in my life. Mm-hmm. It was, for children, it was a deeply affecting time for all of us, and we had nightmares for years and shook a very long time.
We're talking with Patricia Reuterschild, a Pearl Harbor survivor, 14 years old at the time of the attacks on that day, December 7th, 1941. So the first attack happened kind of early in the morning. before 8 o'clock. Was there any sign, or what was the first sense that you had that something was going on that wasn't right?
Well, only that we were up, we had guests in the house, and we were dancing around and prancing around, and the noise had been, as usual, planes coming over and all this. We really paid no attention to it until my father shouted and said, "Get down below fast, this is not a drill." And, of course, we scurried down, and so, and at that time, you know, the shrapnel was coming through our windows and ceiling, and just where I'd been standing, a great big piece came as I moved away. So the bullets were coming through the house. The glass was shattered. The Arizona went and exploded in our ears. At that point, the wall shook. Arizona was right around the corner, just off my father's dock where we went to school in the morning. And we all flew down as fast as possible. And the other officers' children and wives were beginning to collect, too, in this place because it was the only... and the only safe from shrapnel little hideout we had. It was a great big long cavern, a tunnel of closets for all kinds of shipping things and trunks, and then this open space for the turret guns, so that all the children and wives were pushed into these other rooms. So they didn't see as much as I did, I'm afraid, which is just as well. And we were there for two nights, three nights, I forget how many times, days. And we got fresh water from the pool, which was, because the water, when the Arizona blew, it broke all the pipes, all the water pipes. It just, the shallow harbor was, let the ships be so close to us that we could see the whole thing. I mean, you have been there, so you saw.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extraordinary how close these ships are to the ground, to the edge of the water.
You mentioned that there were a lot of people, that the children and wives came into this area, and you were there for a couple of days. How many were in there with you, and were you all supporting each other, or just having to deal with this as individuals? How was it?
We, the elder ones, were just very busy with people, with the burned people that had been blown off the ships.
Yeah.
And the others were all in there. We had tiny babies there who were crying all the time. They got hungry. The toilets started overflowing. We had one down there. And it was a mess. It was a terrible mess. And then, of course, we slept there that night on all these mattresses, which people had brought from their houses as soon as they could, and blankets and things like that. But in the middle of the night, of course, all of a sudden it all started all over again. And that was our people shooting our planes returning from the carriers down with their fingers that were just too anxious to, you know, frightened of planes coming in. We shot our own planes down.
Oh,
tragic. So this was horrific, too.
It's 1:44 here on The Shilling Show. We're talking with Patricia Reuterschuld, a Pearl Harbor survivor. She was 14 years old and living there in Pearl Harbor on this day, December 7th, 1941. We come back on the other side. We can take your calls. I want to talk about what happened in the following weeks and what it was like there in Pearl Harbor. I can hardly imagine the devastation that Patricia has described to us here. 977-1070 is the phone number. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. There's one line open. We'll get back here with Patricia Reuterschuld on The Shilling Show right after this.